And that the Lord be a little married.
Yeah. You with me? I usually start off by telling you where we are. So, we're in the Rouge Valley area, I guess, by the Rouge River. Just a short jaunt from the Glen Rouge campground. This is Toronto's only campground. And it's another one of those hidden treasures of Toronto. It's right here on the edge of Scarborough. Very close to Highway 401, but there's a river runs through it. And my son is here visiting a friend whose family is camping here with their tent facing the, or their camp site, right on the Rouge River. So they get the sound of the river instead of the 401. And it's kind of neat. It's full for the weekend, and I'm feeling kind of, damn it, you know, I should have done that. So I'm thinking, maybe sometime before the year's up. Today I was reflecting how I hadn't gone camping. I never get it together. I used to love camping. I used to take the kids camping. And I just haven't done it for years, it seems, you know. Had a very, very wonderful Barren River trip through Algonquin Park with Cousin Zeke and Barnacle Bill. And since then, that was the last really big trip we've done. That was a fantastic one, my canoe. I'm long overdue for something special like that, but here I got this damn knee is bugging me, so I can't even walk properly. It's hurting me now. So anyway, I dropped my son off, and I thought I'll just take a walk through the park side of the campground. And that's where I'm now, deep in the woods, very quiet, except for the traffic noises and jets going overhead, but there are birds. It is the woods. It is foresty-like. And I think that would be a fine idea. I just love to be up by a campfire and enjoying, you know, a little bit of a jay, sitting by the fire, beer, wine, what have you. Unfortunately, I guess that tells the kind of person I really am. You know, other people talk about nature, and they're into nature. You know, I want to hear the certain birds there. Geese. Ooh, beautiful. V formation of Canada geese flying overhead. But, you know, real outdoor, real green people would be talking about nature. And I'm sitting just thinking, no. For me, what I want is that campfire, some weed, and some booze. Seems a shame, but that's as far as I've evolved in my life, okay? So I don't want to pretend I'm anybody other than that, all right? That's who I am. That's where I got to in this lifetime, all right? If you don't like it, go fuck yourself. That's who I am. And I've enjoyed it. But, well, hang on. Here's a little opening by the river. Yeah, a little bit of an outpost standing up. It's down to virtually a creek now. I have sailed my canoe further down. It empties into Lake Ontario, of course. And I have done a canoe ride through this, lower down from this park, you know. It's quite nice. Something else I'd love to do. Gee, my wife and I used to actually go canoeing. The kids used to do it. Get them in the middle. That's why I bought the canoe. I've talked about that before. It's so sad when people grow up and grow apart, you know. It happens. Maybe not for all of you. But that's certainly my experience now, and it was nice to drop my son off and chat with him. And I did have good times with my sons this summer, but still, feeling distant from all of us, distant from my wife, distant from everybody, you know? I talked about that, I guess, in the last podcast. I was out playing croquet and suddenly felt this separation, even from my Toronto friends. Why is that, folks? Because I prefer to stand and hold a microphone and talk this way and send it out to you? Bunch of strangers? Nah. You're not strangers, you're friends. Anyway, I guess this is the beginning, all right? I guess this is the beginning to the long Labor Day weekend campground. I guess that's why I'm feeling a little down, because it is a special weekend. I feel I should be doing something special. It's Labor Day. This is the weekend. When you're young, you party, you know? You go out and do things. You go camping. You have parties with your friends. You go drinking. You do stuff. Well, what am I complaining about? I've already lined up tomorrow at the only cafe. I'm going to meet my good friend. I gave him some fake Irish name last time, right? Mr. McConnell or somebody, I don't know, from down from Nunavut. You've met him before. He was just in from China and on his way back to Nunavut. Now he's officially retired, moved to Toronto close by. So I've got an old drinking buddy. He was my Nigerian pal, the guy I was went off to Nigeria with in 1980. My good friend. So I'll be meeting him tomorrow. And, of course, my new friend through via PAB 2007, Mr. John Meadows. And invited him to join us. So that'll be kind of fun. That'll be kind of special. And I guess that's not very interesting, is it? I'm awfully sorry. Oh, yeah. All right. I've been told, don't apologize, man. Don't apologize. You know, just give them what they want, but don't apologize. But, yeah. I'm coming back to my car. I've circled around. I'm looking out at the sky. And I guess I'm going to go on and, I don't know, do something with the rest of it. I've spent the whole day on my computer trying to update photos. And I'm sort of trying to tell myself I don't have to start work till after Labor Day. That's when I really got to buckle down and start making some money because, you know, otherwise I'm in big trouble. So that's what I'll do. But meanwhile, that gives me this weekend to just try and stay, you know, relatively decent. You know, my poor wife is probably going to be working, so I got to make it look like I'm doing something, not just slugging off for the whole weekend. Like I spent half an hour watering the plants. Haven't watered my back lawn the entire summer, and of course it's brown, it's dead. And I can't say I'm lost, but I'm nowhere near where I got onto this path. I gotta find my way back to my car now. Yeah, nice little trail, there we are. Okay, so folks, that was a warm-up, that was a start, and I don't even know, I don't think I, there's no content in there, so I may not be able to send this. But when has that stopped me before, right? Like, I feel like I've got to dig a little deeper. Find a nugget, man. Find a nugget. Give him something. Give him something in there, man. Okay, so what I'll give you is, I went to the Green Party gathering. They said, what, last Thursday or third Thursday, every or third Wednesday every month at the Old Stone Cottage Inn, a watering hole, a bar in Scarborough. So I figured, okay, this night was open. This slot was open. I went in there and met our candidate for the Guildwood, Scarborough Guildwood area, our new candidate. Shit, a bridge. I shouldn't be coming to a bridge. Oh, I'm crossing over the Rouge River. Well, I guess I am, but where the fuck is my car? Oh, I see some people coming. Oh, yeah, I started off this way. So anyway, met the new candidate and nailed him with three questions right off the bat. And then by the end of the evening, I met somebody actually from the running for the Federal Party, Green Party. And he was well informed on a number of green issues. And I just ignored the people walking by. This guy was actually very, very interesting. He had a lot to say. And so at the end of the evening, I sort of mentioned that I'd done a podcast. I really wasn't fishing for listeners. And all of them asked, oh, can we listen? So I'm a little embarrassed, you know, if they've gone in, people who don't really know me and people who are Green Party members are probably pretty serious about, you know, the environment and societal issues and lots of other things. And I just, you know, I sent a real warning with him. Listen to this show. It's just some middle-aged man rambling, you know. It's not your kind of stuff. Go out there. I gave him a list of the Canadian podcast director. I said, here, pick something else. And I feel sort of a little embarrassed about it. Like, in fact, as I've told you many times before, I don't want listeners who aren't tuned into this, who don't get me or get what it is to be who I am or my age or whatever it is, you know. I'm not out there trying to win, you know, listeners, man. It's the last bloody thing. I don't want to waste anybody's time. You're into it or you're not. That's fine. So it was with some embarrassment that I gave it to them. Which is to say what? Well, I asked my three questions. I really wanted to know, Stan. I had three questions for them. And I got good, fair, direct answers. And the first question, of course, was, what's your stand on pot or drugs, you know? And it was an agreement, decriminalize or legalize, really, pretty well. That was an official party stance. And so that was okay. Second question, what about prostitution? And I got a little evasive on that, just weren't too sure really whose problem it is. Federal, provincial, municipal, what? But in general, as the discussion went on, you know, yeah, probably in favor of legalizing that too. And then the third question was, of course, educational funding, which I know the Green Party has made a stand. They're going to abolish the Catholic schools, merge them all into one public school system. Right now we have two, right? We've always had the Catholic system and the public system. And the other religious groups in the country are always crying foul and saying that's discrimination. If the Catholics can have it, then the Jews want it, the Sikhs want it, and we want all the equal funding. Now, the trouble is you put in that money into these other systems and you're just pulling it out of the public system, and next thing you know, we got fuck all and only the rich people are going to benefit because their kids are just going to go to private schools anyway. They don't care. So that's the platform of the conservative government, for the provincial conservative government. They want to fund all the other religious schools. And I think that is a huge mistake and is the end of our public education system if they go that way. The liberals say, no, they won't. It'll sort of maintain status quo, put a little more money back into the system that the conservatives took out, which is good. But the Green Party says, but we're going to merge the Catholic system and the regular public system into one school board, so there's only one board for everybody. And that takes courage because they're going to alienate a lot of Catholic voters. But I'm interested in a party that has principles. And those are principles that they're stand on. They're not just going for the cheap votes, which is what the Tories are doing. They're going there because they think this is the best way to do it. It's going to cost them, but damn it, I've got to respect them for that. So there you go. That's what this is all about. My little evening visiting with the Green Party at the Old Stone Cottage here in Scarborough. Had enough of me? I've had enough of me. That was probably the most boring introduction to a podcast that I've done in a very long time. Thanks very much, and goodbye. Catch you later.
Stop. We'll be right back.
Yeah. It's Saturday now. Just turned exactly 1 o'clock, 1 p.m. I've done not much. Well, I did bake. Actually, I baked a dozen muffins for the boys this morning. I think that was something, and I got number one son to cut the front lawn, so hey, that's something, and I've got number two son lined up to cut the back lawn, so I guess that's something. I've read the paper, I've made coffee, and I've taken several pictures of some morning glories that are just gorgeous against the blue sky. It is just one beautiful day. Anybody living here in Toronto knows that, and this is, again, it's September 1st, and it's fall at its finest, end of summer, but just so beautiful. I know it's a stupid thing to say, because, like, what's that mean? But the weather really does have an impact on our feelings, our moods, and as we move into fall, my whole body seems to come alive, just seems touched by it all. It's just a wonderful feeling. But then I'd say that about almost all the seasons, except summer. Anyway, I've been going through some notes here. I think last time I mentioned that a friend had passed away, and it's, you know, as we get older, this is going to happen. He was only 3 years older than me, and a lot of people have written little anecdotes for him in the, you can do this online now, which is kind of nice for the newspaper, a memorial page. And Cousin Zeke knew him very well, because he was part of the... Cousin Zeke came out to the West Coast in 72, 73, if you remember. If you're following my personal history, I doubt that you are, but I moved out west after graduating from Sir George Williams. I moved out in 72, took the train out there, and moved in with my girlfriend, and this person I'd already known in Montreal. I'll call him by his real name. I'll call him A Dot. That was his middle initial, and he was sometimes referred to as A Dot. More commonly, Dat Dada, because that's how he got your attention. He made a very loud trumpet-sounding noise to get your attention, rather than, you know, like I say, this social politeness of waiting your turn to speak wasn't necessary. He had something to say, and you better listen. My cousin Zeke describes him as somewhat of a difficult friend, was one way he put it. I'd like to read what he wrote. Zeke was just coming back from a camping trip in Algonquin. I think it's quite remarkable. Somebody just goes off on their own, loads up the car, heads off to Algonquin Park on his own, hikes in a couple of lakes, and comes back out. I wish I could do that kind of thing, or did that kind of thing. I might have in my youth, I did, but not now. Anyway, it reads, and this was a message that went out to everybody who knew A Dot. Improvisation is at the heart of camping. The broken cork, no corkscrew, is duct taped for travel. Richard, well, that's his real name, was famous for improvising. He traveled Europe with a ping pong ball as a universal sink stopper. I'll interrupt every once in a while. He traveled Europe in the smallest of bags. Like, everybody has, like, suitcases, huge backpacks. He just had something he could sling over your shoulder. That's how he traveled. It's all he needed. He immediately became part of the exotica of the West Coast when I arrived in 1972-73. The apartment on the North Shore with a TV set that was never shut off. Just volume and contrast down. He had a TV set, and he knew if he ever turned it off, it was just it was going to blow, and it was not going to work again. So every night, turned down the contrast, turned down the volume, but nobody was ever allowed to go near it in case they used the on-off switch. Finally, a power outage by BC Hydro destroyed it. He had a Corvair Monza, the Corvair Monza with the rear-mounted aluminum engine, turbocharged, disconnected, that cornered beautifully, and how he delighted in tormenting us or terrorizing us as a curve down along by the grain elevators, because Richard understood physics, and he knew, even in his Volkswagen, he knew when it would flip and when it wouldn't. The rest of us as passengers didn't have that sense of confidence, but he knew. He studied physics at McGill. And to get into reverse, it had a coat hanger through the floor that had to be pulled. Yeah, when the transmission broke, he didn't go into a mechanic and spend that kind of money. Richard never had a job, by the way. Well, he had a job as an architect or a draftsman for a little while, but didn't really work most of his life.
It was all a conspiracy. So he fixed his own car. Coat hanger, right through a hole in the floor, getting onto the right link on the transmission. You want reverse, you just yank up on that coat hanger. I don't know many people who drive a car like that these days. There was the red cable spool round table. And this was, you know, these huge spools that, you probably see them in apartments now, but he was a pioneer for that type of thing. Somehow got this huge spool of wire home, no wire on it anymore. The hole in the center held the lid to a big glass jar that screwed up to the bottom, and an ashtray covering a hole in the lid so the ash could be emptied by flipping it into the jar underneath. So he had this giant jar, I mean, I don't know how many gallons, 5 gallon jar, screwed into a lid attached to this table, so he never had to get up. Every time his ashtray was full, he was a heavy smoker, he just took the ashtray out of the hole, dumped it, and it just till this container was full of ashes. Again, he just, you know, thought about that. Nobody else would ever do that. People would actually get up and empty their ashtray. It could be emptied by flipping the jar underneath. We had endless discussions as to the physics of its safety. We had endless discussions and discussions to climb and excursions to climb the Squamish chief, it's the chieftain in Squamish, to protest on the Lions Gate Bridge, to the Burnaby Legion to hear Marine Engineer Ray Watson's wartime experiences, etc. Richard was established in the bedroom with his beloved stereo collection, inscrutably in mood order. I now regret the odd psychopathic stray I disrupted his life with, but too late now. Yeah, an entire record collection filed by mood order. Again, everybody else would do by groups, by alphabet, by this, by year, whatever. No, his was all set by mood order, and of course nobody could fathom what that was. Richard, you know, I'm filling in now, was eccentric. Richard could be a difficult friend. He was different. He was brilliant. Perhaps the word is even genius. He did understand the physics of automatic transmissions and TV sets, and wave functions, and mathematics, and science, with an insight that we could only peek at. That it never came to practical fruition may be regrettable. The only jobs I know of are the pumping of gas and a brief stint as a drafting. But not so much in the grand scheme of things. Perhaps evolution spawns such individuals because of the benefit of the few Einsteins that get focused. Social intelligence can take a backseat to more abstract thought. But we pretty well always got on. I found his intellect extremely interesting. Again, this is Cousin Zeke's recollections. Something else, I'll stop here now, but... Richard sent out emails he was up to. I have the last one I have is number 75, something called Free Slops. And it would be quotations from famous thinkers, philosophers, scientists, psychologists, economists, and a little blurb about them, and then a series of, attached at the bottom, very abstract paintings from all over, mostly European, that somehow maybe fit the theme. It was probably quite brilliant. I regret to say I never appreciated it enough, and very often I didn't read them. It's sort of like the Dixon Jane's newsletter I used to send out that some people would pick up to it and read everything, and some wouldn't. Now that Richard's gone, I'm very grateful that I've hung on to many of them and will go back and read. In fact, that's what I was doing before I started this recording and found it very, very interesting. So, folks, I guess I'm going to spend a little bit of time on this podcast. There's a memorial, not a service, a gathering for him next Friday, September 7th, out in Vancouver, and unfortunately I can't make it. And he's kind of in my thoughts today. So you are going to hear a little bit about one more of the friends I've lost. I've talked about John, who died in the Czech Republic, was a childhood friend of Richard's. And... It's an amazing web of connections that brought us all together, but when you meet certain people, they do have an impact. And like I say, Richard didn't have social skills, and so he could be very, very difficult to be around. He upset a lot of people. But There's just no doubt about it. He was brilliant. He was the fire master at all our camp. We had a tradition of Mother's Day camping weekends. It's gone over 25 years now. I haven't been, they're always out in the interior of British Columbia, so I don't get to go to many anymore. But Richard had attended every single one of them and was the fire master, the person that built and looked after the fire and could be counted on to be there. And so he will be missed. He will be sorely missed by a lot of people. I'm going to get back. I'm going to read something else that he sent along in this free slop. Hang on. Yeah, this is just a fraction of something that he sent out in one of the free slops. And it's by a psychologist, I guess, John Ubersachs. A psychologist so cool and smooth that one considers a strategic application of a large blunt instrument. And what he writes on existential psychology. Existential psychology can be summarized as this. People live trapped in a box. We must get out of that box. As human beings, we have an incredible capacity for happiness, for loving involvement, for appreciation of beauty. Our mere existence is profound, mysterious, and wonderful. Now, I know that. We need to regain what is important in life. We are not living the lives we were meant to live. This realization shouldn't depress us. It should motivate us to action. Now, listen, folks, grab onto that once more. We need to regain what is important in life. We are not living the lives we were meant to live. The realization shouldn't depress us. It should motivate us to action. We have been trapped. The mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation. That's Thoreau, of course. And the psychologist goes on. And again, this is in Richard's passage that he sent out to all of those who were subscribed. We're taught how to act, talk, think, and feel, conditioned. Some conditioning is good, but a lot mainly serves the interest of other people, individuals, governments, corporations, etc. Our thinking is shaped by people and things with agendas different than ours. Here, our human nature works against us. We are genetically programmed to imitate and conform. The result? Most of how we see the world is distorted. That limits our ability to deal with the world and other people, and to do the things that lead to happiness. Adding to our problem is our tendency to worry. We constantly worry about the past and future. And in the present, we impose our needs, real or imagined, and expectations on how we see other people in the world. Further, as we grow up, we cope with fears by adding false layers to our personality. We do things to try to appear more intelligent, more interesting, more successful, etc. Folks, please stop, rewind, play again. These added layers, affectations, are yet another thing that comes between our real selves and the world. Most affectations are rooted in the desire to be loved, and yet, these things make it more difficult to relate to others and for the real love to occur. Alienation. So there's a lot that takes us away from who we really are and what we really want. We live in a state of alienation. Our true selves are alienated, distance or apart from the world. Didn't I talk about distance last time? From society and from other people. Society tells us we should be happy with material possessions, etc. But we know something is missing. It's like being trapped in a box, because there is a wonderful, beautiful reality that resides within us, in our hearts and souls, in our highest dreams and aspirations. Our inner nature resists how our superficial selves attempt to live. In this war, there can only be one victor, our true nature. We cannot change who we really are. The choice is between the expression of our true selves or a life of unhappiness. Now, I'm going to stop there. It goes on, and that's sort of one free slop that he sent out. There were 75 at last count. Each one of them carefully chosen passages for people to read and digest, and I just regret to say that so often it came as an email and I just felt I didn't have the time, I'd read some and I'd react, yeah, that's right, that's right. Now that Richard's gone, Richard who sent these out to us, I will treasure the ones I have left. Sorry. Just fine. Was in the middle of a podcast, but that's quite all right. I'll come back to this. I've got things I have to do, but I'll be back. You'll be hearing more. Digest that, please. Soldier's Poem from Muse. That was one of from a CD my son bought and passed on to me. He really likes that song. And so a lot of the music you're getting these days are things that have been passed along to me from my eldest son. And I think that's kind of neat. I'm open to it. I mean, I get a lot and I filter through and just, you know, maybe one out of 10 I really like, but that's good enough. It's great. And anyway, I'm also trying to think of things that are sort of in the theme of remembering Richard, and that's kind of a mournful song. It just seemed to fit somehow. Don't want to analyze that too much, and as you know, I don't make much in the way of show notes trying to explain this and that. You can always find links to any music I play, or at least the I mention who the artist is and from what CD, and will all the time. I want to get back to the thing he sent me from John Ubersacks, the psychologist, talking about existential psychology. I realize, you know, I listened back to what I read out to you, and it's very hard to fully understand something when it's being read to you, I think, anyway. So I'm probably going to post, I don't know, a link, or if anybody's really interested, email me, and I'll forward Richard's last free slop out to anybody's interested, but just let me know, dixonjanes@gmail.com. And I think you'll find it a little easier. It's a bit long, it's 3 pages, too long for me to put up on the blog. But one passage I keep coming back to, let's see. Our thinking is shaped by people and things with agendas different than ours. Here our human nature works against us. We are genetically programmed to imitate and conform. And again, it's just talked about how we're conditioned from day one, from school, to serve other people's interests. And he goes on later on talking about, you know, how we try to make friends to satisfy our own needs. And that's not really true friendship. I'm trying to bring all this together because I'm still baffled by how close I can feel to podcasters who I've only met a few times. You know, but we know each other through our shows, and I don't know if that's a false friendship, and forgive me for saying that, because I know you're thinking it's real. I'm thinking it's real, but has it been tested? And are friendships the things that are really tested over time and difficulties like a marriage? And maybe these podcasting type friendships are just through the good times, I don't know. You know, we sort of have images of each other we like and we support, and we buoy each other up somehow. And is that real? All this comes about because I spent last evening with, well, interestingly enough, started off at the only cafe with a new podcasting friend, John Meadows, who I realize is somebody, man, I want to cultivate this friendship. This man is a wealth of lots of different things, a depth of character and creative imagination and intelligent on top of that, and a good 15 years younger than me, very refreshing. And I guess somebody in the age group I don't really know that much of, you know, mid-40s. So anyway, that was very good, and he got to meet my friend Brian from Nunavut, who I met in 1980 when we settled off, ran off to Nigeria with another 100 Cusos. And of course, Brian and I have been tight friends ever since. One of the things I realized last night as I sat with Brian, we left, John left us, and we went on, Brian and I, to eat, and then dropped in at the Eaton Hotel on the Danforth, and I thought we had entered a time warp. Like, it was Hastings Street in BC, it was Prince George, British Columbia, it was small town Ontario. We fit in. We were part of the older clientele. I couldn't believe it. There was nobody. Well, there was one young blonde who pouted most of the time. We didn't know why she was there. With a table who almost got into a fight. But everybody else was just old farts up there dancing. And they had a guy, Marty Delaney, who was incredible. A Newfoundlander, a real Newfoundlander, who put on the most amazing show. Now, I nipped out a couple of times for tokes, so of course, music in a bar gets even better when you're half-pissed and get a couple of tokes into you, but man, was that good. I got his email, sent him a message, and I was thinking about booking this guy for some event, because, man, I got to go back sober next time to the bar, the Eaton Hotel, and see what he sounds like sober, but man, he was sure good last night. But I sat there with Brian and realized here's a guy who is high energy all the time. He just doesn't slow down. And has a positive outlook. Brian told me he never gets depressed. He just never gets depressed. And like there's times in my life I've almost hated the guy for it. How can you be full of so much energy and just do so many things for so people, so kind? People just love Brian wherever he goes. How can he be so nice? I'm not nice like that. How can he have all this energy, this resilience? How can he never get depressed? And I realized last night, as we shared this discussion, we are victims of our chemistry, that this is our personalities, our selves, who we are, is a result of our chemical makeup. And it's never been as clear to me as it was last night when I looked at him and said, well, you can't help being up all the time. That's just the way you're made. And I can't help but if I swing left and right with highs and lows and because I'm just the way I am. And I think we have to accept that. We're victims of our chemistry. And then get on, accept that and get on with just doing the best of what we can with the cards we're dealt. You know, play your hand as best you can. And I think that's got to be true for every one of you. If you just stop for a minute and think, what's your chemistry? What are you shaped by, you know? It ain't your fault. You're the way you are. You're just born that way. You're made that way. And you're going to be that way. So accept it, live with it, make the most of it, fine-tune it, and deal with it as you can. But don't run yourself down comparing yourself to other people, because you can't be anybody other than who you are. You can be better. You can evolve. You can grow. I believe all that. He goes on in this passage, unless you become as little children, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. Of course, that's Matthew 18, verses 2 to 4. But he's saying, what is enlightenment? When religious people talk about enlightenment, they usually make it seem like a big deal. You have to go to a monastery for 20 years and read tons of books to be enlightened. I don't think that is what the spiritual masters are talking about at all. Truth is simple, not complicated. In large part, enlightenment means simply being enlightened, literally becoming enlightened. It's letting go of old layers, not adding new ones. Now keep that, letting go of old layers. It's not a matter of going somewhere we've never been, but one of returning to where we once were. In fact, we've already been in this state as children, and yeah, we were different as children. We just acquire a lot of surplus baggage in the process of growing up. So how does one become enlightened? The first step is to realize that you have built up these layers of affections, affectations. Look for them. Have the desire to find them. Question your habitual assumptions about yourself, that you need this or that in order to be happy. You know, question those assumptions. Look at the various elements of your life, your possessions, your profession, your friends, your activities. Consider how each of these may relate to an affectation, something you've added to your personality to make yourself appear better or to symbolically satisfy some personal need for security, and consider whether this thing is really you. Maybe you can even remember the time in your life when this affectation developed. Now, as you do, you will realize how many layers are associated with the need to achieve things like love, admiration, security, and friendship. In short, most affectations relate one way or another to a misguided attempt to receive something from another person. Now again, I guess there's no point in me going on reading because I think it is really hard to process. But man, there's a lot of truth in there. Cut through the bullshit. Like why is that? And it's, I don't have the answers. And this guy doesn't have the answer. He's just saying, hey, start taking a closer look. Because that's why I remember I was worried about being the Scarborough dude and being popular and getting a little scared because I like being the Scarborough dude and I like being popular. And I think, wait a minute, that's just another layer of bullshit, man. What's with that? You know, what's with his need to be liked by people? Fuck him. I can't, you know, I say that, but it's just not true. I want to be liked, man. Fuck. Yeah, I guess it's pretty natural, but like, why? You know, why? Just like yourself, be satisfied with yourself. Don't try to prove anything. And I guess my friend Richard, going full circle here, was beyond all that. He didn't need this approval. He didn't need these layers. I don't know that he would have been able to anyway, but he was just so far beyond that. And this is the thing about him. It could be pretty chilling because, man, if you put on any affectations or pretenses, he just cut through that so quick and so fast and so sharp. It left you stunned, you know. You picked up the pieces afterwards and went on your merry way. I'm going to say one more thing about him. It's not a nice story, but it's a story something about that I learned early on about his character. We had a mutual friend, Rod, who's also up in Yellowknife. Part of this gang, we had a gang in Lachine, right? Okay, that's my sort of my hometown. Most of this gang in Lachine moved to Vancouver. Through Richard, we met John and Peter and other people who were already established. They're from the West Coast. And there was this merging of the tribes, and it was quite wonderful because we had whole new instant, deep friendships. Now, Rod goes back to Lachine, and he was not a big guy, thin guy, very, very funny, very kind, very, very gentle person. A freak who later became a transcendental meditation teacher and still is. Somebody I respect, admire, think highly of, but in the old days, a real pothead as well. But even before that, high school time, Rod was, I was going to say frail. Frail's not the word, but not a big guy, not a guy who'd pick fights. And Richard saw somebody bullying Rod once. Somebody who was going to hit him or threaten him or just plain being mean because he could. You know, the kind of things bullies do because they can. And Richard wanted to teach this guy a lesson. And what he did was he waited till this guy, Richard was in his car, I don't know what car, waited till this guy was just sort of walking past. I think Rod was there. Maybe the guy was following or something. And Richard suddenly smacked open that car door with all his might, full force, right into the guy, knocked him flying. Now, I didn't see it. The story was related to me. It was a crude, it was a harsh lesson. It was just simply a lesson Richard felt this person needed to be taught, and this person wasn't going to understand any other way except by brute force. Don't mess with my friend Rod. And I kind of cheer him on for that. I think he did the right thing, and I think that person did not go out for revenge, and that person probably didn't do that again. And maybe this story has taken on a life of its own now that, you know, this was 45 years ago, who knows. Anyway, I'm going to move on to other topics. I did say we went out last night, and I got drunk again. I must be such a fool, but not stupidly meanly drunk. I never get drunk just because we could. Why the hell not? Just because we're old, we can't do that. And both Brian and I are like that. We are, John Meadows used the term zoomers, you know, these new boomers who have energy and they're still young, not ready to be put out to pasture just yet. So we had several enjoyable beer at the Only Cafe. Fine, fine place right off the Donlan Subway. Check it out. Probably my favorite bar in Toronto. Up there, my top five worldwide. And from there to Square Boy for a nice hot chicken dinner. And from there for the Eaton Hotel. And man, was that a blast. I'm going back. Hope to bring somebody else along sometime, you know. Anyway, we kind of agreed, and after that, on the way home, walking back to the subway, if I could, why not just head back into the Only and round it all off with yet another beer we didn't need, and we did. So I'm a fool and a happy fool and a damn fine fool, and not suffering today because it was just healthy, good living. So what more do I have to say? Nothing sounds pretty superficial, doesn't it? I guess I'll stop there and probably get back to you with one more piece as I finished off this podcast. Thanks, Amanda, for listening to show 107 and sending in a comment. I hope you catch up sometime. I hope eventually you hear this from the day before Labor Day, the Sunday before Labor Day, when everything's got to start getting serious again. The kids go back to school. I got to start working and making fucking money because I still got to play that game. So I'll get back to you in a bit. I'm going to throw in another song that I don't know what yet, but something I like, and I hope you like. By the way, listen, folks, I don't get much feedback. I mean, I did. I got 25 things when I talked about Canada, but about the show, I've been thinking, is it time to finally get rid of that intro of mine? That intro, by the way, if you're new, is the real voice of Jack Kerouac in a New York studio on a day when he was recording his poetry, and the guy who calls out, what's this one called? No Title Again, was the sound engineer at the time, and that's Miles Davis on the horn, bringing those notes up, 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 up to lead you to the beginning of the show. And I still like it, but man, I listen to other people's intros and they're good. I mean, I could have a show of just my favorite intros from people. So I'm wondering if you're tired of mine, if it needs a new one, or if I just say, fuck you, stick with it. That's what it is. That's what it will be. It reminds me, I don't know why, but because of the notes that it sort of ends on rising like that, it makes me think of J. Alfred Prufrock, the poem by T.S. Eliot, with the theme being to lead you to an overwhelming question. And I think as the notes rise, it's leading you to, oh, what are we going to expect this time? And often you find this is what you get, folks. Just this. Big build-up, but just this. Because this is, as far as I'm concerned, from my little vantage point on this planet, this is what's real. Gorgeous day. You know where I am? I'm sitting. Did I tell you? I'm sitting leaning against one of those willow trees that I normally am looking at. So I'm looking where I was sitting like half an hour ago. I'm looking back at my own deck. I put a little gate in our fence and I just sort of open that fence and crawl up into this park, which is on a lovely hillside, and look back at the wonderful house I have in Scarborough and think how lucky I am, damn it. How lucky I am. My first house ever. And it's a dandy. It's a dandy. So back a little later, okay? Here's a song. Listen to, oh yeah, sorry, question. not just about changing the intro. What does the music mean to you? Is it like it's, to me, it's a part of the show. It's something I got to give you a little extra. And I know, of course, we've visited the topic many times. I don't have the rights to any of these, but because I have such a small listenership, I personally don't think it matters. And I ain't going to worry about that. And I hope none of you do either. But meanwhile, let me know. You know, do you like the songs? Does it mean something to you? Do you actually sort of enjoy? Do you actually stop to listen? Or do you fast forward like Bob Goyette probably does? Let me know. DixonJanes@gmail.com. Bye, bye, Miss American, bye.
If I were Prime Minister, I'd be elected on Friday, assassinated on Saturday, buried on Sunday. If I were Prime Minister... Hey, Scarborough dude, this is Adam Greatrix on the West Coast, contemplating this. What would I do if I was Prime Minister for a day? You know what? I always thought this was a really good idea, and I was surprised Canadians didn't go for it. I think Canada should be the protectorate of Turks and Caicos, that island in the Caribbean. A few years ago, the British, their contract or agreement was running up for this little island, and the Canadian government was considering, you know, being, you know, annexing it as a territory or however they do it. I thought it was a wonderful idea. Canada having a tropical territory. I thought that was so exciting. It was so, you know, beyond, you know, it would expand the Canadian, you know, identity and culture. We could go down to this island and make it more Canadian. We could set up, you know, sand hockey with the people there. I mean, it would be an ultimate holiday destination. It would bolster the, you know, Canadian-ness of the world. I don't know. I just thought it was a great idea. And I had always had these dreams about leaving my life and moving to that tropical island of Turks and Caicos. So I think that's what I would do. I think that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, excuse me. Just wanted to add one more thing here. While I sit basking in the glorious sunshine, God, it's nice. I feel kind of ashamed. I didn't do anything this weekend. Jesus, went out and got drunk last night. That's something. Celebrated my old friend Brian, my good bosom buddy for 27 years. And incidentally, he's just moved into Toronto. I got a new friend here, so I got some other friends I got to hook up with Brian because I think they're all going to like each other. And I think I want to have a big party at the Eaton House, so come along. If you're in Toronto, get in touch with me. Call me. Hey, dude, can I come? We'll have a party at the Eaton House. Listen to Marty Delaney. We'll even get up and dance. If I can get this knee healed. Speaking of which, my car is also dying. I think the muffler's gone or the exhaust manifold is leaking or something, and it's just, you know, it sounds horrible. So I got to get that into a repair shop. Another expense I don't need, but it's all part of living. It's all part of living. I wanted to say one more point about, I've talked about serendipity, and I've talked about this sort of tidy ring you can sometimes get where everything sort of, what is the word, where you, things begin and end sort of at the same place. My last podcast, when I started it, I was recording CBC, and the guy was going on about Jack Kerouac's last trip to go to Expo. And then I went out to the party and probably made a recording from the party or two about personality. And got on the train to come home the next morning. And I sat down, and across from me there was two young guys, just early 20s, maybe 21 or so. Guy reaches into his backpack and pulls out a copy of On the Road. And I was going to go over there. I had my mic. I was going to go over and interview the guy. I probably should have, but I was sort of nursing my wounds, and they were having a private conversation. It was just kind of fun just to watch him. But I thought it was so neat that the show started with Kerouac, and then on the way home, the end of this whole thing, I'd put it together, the last piece, somebody hauls out a copy of On the Road once again, and this thing continues to live. And sometimes that happens, and you end up back where you started from. Maybe that's it. You can look for these things in life. It's fun. You know, I do. I choose to. I choose to play games and attach significance to anything. Why not? So, yeah. So this show began with talking about my canoe, wasn't I? For whatever reason, I don't remember. And today or tomorrow, a neighbor is coming over with a couple of beer, and I may have to sell him my canoe because I don't have a place to park it, and he's sort of been using it the past several years, and he's got two kids, and I really need the money, and it makes more sense him having it, but I'm really, really sad. It feels like there's a part of me going, something I bought long ago that for the family. And I don't even have a roof rack. I've had my car since 2001. I don't have a roof rack, so it hasn't been on my car since 2001. You know, it's been on other people's roofs, but not on mine. And what are the chances of me really going out with it again? I want to, but is it just hanging on to an illusion just because I can't let go of anything? Or is it time to actually give it up? My kids aren't going to go out canoeing with me again. My wife's not. If I really need a canoe, I can rent one somewhere. Is it time to say goodbye to that canoe? Is it time to close that chapter? I'll let you know. I'll let you know.
Should I be afraid of dying? There's no reason for it. You've got to go sometime.